I think it's working.
Yep, yes. Actually, I always help with the lights here, but I think... So we need Simon. So we have 3 more minutes. Working too.
Okay, so stick will be here.
Wanna do this thing? It's cooperation, yes. We rely on the kindness of strangers. You're up first, so. Turn on, yeah. Questions and or comments.
And if you are on the stream watching us live, you can also use the same login to log in to ask questions from Trondheim or from where else the stream might be going to.
And also, you can vote.
And you can vote on the quality of questions. And we'll be discussing that as we continue with the session.
Great. Thank you, Simon. We have official. Yes. Great. Welcome. This is the first NIS lecture. I will explain a bit more what the purpose of NIS lectures are, etc. The title of this lecture is Our Cybersecurity Challenge, a Serious Game. As we say, we have this question service here. The program is rather tight. I'm going to try and explain in the next 3 to 4 minutes why you're here. And also, since this is cyberspace and it's the death of distance where you are, to understand cybersecurity, you have to understand the concept of digital space. And you'll be playing and learning about digital space over the next 3 to 8 years, depending on whether you want to go and what program you want to go to. Right now we're phoning up Stig. As you see in the program, we will have Professor Stig Frommelse from Trondheim, and he's not answering. So we're just setting up connections. Vi ska prata om ungefär 40. Okay. As you see the layout, I will spend where and why. Simon will talk about serious games. And redundancy is good. Thank you. Barsh is tech support. You always need tech support in cyberspace. Gelter will talk about our experience of something called the Cyber 912 Challenge. Socrates will talk about a challenge that's going on right now that you can participate in. And Stig Frode will talk about the activities they have in Trondheim when it comes to joining a hacker club. And then we will sum up, Simon and I, and try and explain out what you should be doing, that where and why you should be doing things next term. This is the Department of Information Security and Communication Technology. You are in a department that has 80 employees in Jurvik and in Trondheim. We research many different areas in security, from biometrics to cyber defense, critical infrastructure, cryptography, digital forensics, e-health, and well-being. And also we have individuals from other departments in this thing. We explain that later. You should be, your students here, you're from bachelor programs, master programs, civil engineering programs, and PhD programs. So we have many students. Basically, I think there are about 30 individuals that registered online right now. This department and this faculty, we do research in many different areas, and these are a list of all the different research areas we have. And the interesting thing, of course, is the money. You should always be looking at the money, understanding money. About 40 million is being invested right now to help develop new knowledge in cybersecurity. One of the things you will learn here, you will learn knowledge, and then you will learn new knowledge, and hopefully you will create new knowledge. That's the important thing in cybersecurity, because things change all the time and you create new truths. We host in this department a center called the Center for Cyber and Information Security, and I'll be giving some information about that. But more importantly, I'll be explaining some of the things you can do outside of your classrooms. The purpose of this lecture is to inform you on how you can get involved outside the formal learning. And we have the Cyber Symposium that's done in May in Oslo. We have something called the Secure NOK, which is the end of the Cybersecurity Month in Norway. We're responsible for organizing that. And we have some activities called the Security Top Leader Forum, Säkerhetstoppmötet. And these are all things we're hoping that you can participate, be active, attend, etc., outside of your formal learning process. Why are you here? This is a very unique environment. This came out today, or yesterday. Those that cannot read Norwegian, is basically saying the cooperation between NTNU and the cyber defense is unique. So you are in a unique environment, and you should take advantage of it. So everybody likes to be unique. Simon really likes to be unique. I don't, but that's another issue. But we come from totally different backgrounds. I'm an ex-police officer, and he's an ex-not police officer. We have this center called the Center for Cyber and Information Security, and what this is, as you see, we're supposed to build, as the marketing department has done, we're supposed to build these human bridges. So you're not a brick in a wall. You're a bolt on the bridge. How about you're a bolt on the bridge? And you see here we have many of these different research activities on the left, and the NTNU and everything we're doing there. On the right we have a number of your future employers and or people that are protecting your lives as we speak now. Don't forget, you're going to be living in cyberspace, and I always joke about the fact that for my generation And see how many people understand this joke. So I'll raise up hands on a joke. I usually start off by saying, on my death certificate, there's an 80% chance that the cause of death will be blue screen. I see some people. How many people don't understand the joke? People will say, okay. Yeah. Beforehand, you had something called the blue screen, and basically you should understand that DOS comes from something called QDOS, which stands for Quick and Dirty Operating System. So our entire cyber infrastructure is built on something called a Quick and Dirty Operating System. So your lives are dependent to much extent on a Quick and Dirty Operating System. So why do we want to do about this? What are we doing? We have these activities that you can participate in. So we're here today in something called the NIST Lecture. We also have activities called the NIST Seminars. We have something called Secure NOC 2017. We have something, the Cyber Challenge, which Socrates will present. We had something, and will have something, called Cyber Nine Times Challenge. And of course, all of you would love to do your student theses out in industry and make contacts and make cyber connections so that you can get better jobs and pay better taxes so the healthcare system in Norway will be better and that I won't have to die of a blue screen. So these are the different things you can do. This is what we're trying to build up. This is a list and a part of all the different activities happening during this semester. Here, we're here right now with the 25th. And then we have something called NIST Seminars, and they're going to be in A146. The times on that you can find later. And we have PhD candidates speaking. And then we have the next NIST lecture will be the Deputy Director of Digital Societal Institute. The NIST lectures are designed to present people from outside, and the NIST seminars are designed so that we be presenting people on the inside. So this basically is actually more a seminar than a NIST lecture, but we wanted to introduce the students. And you're doing this on your free time. And then you see we have this whole list of seminars. And the important thing I want to do later on that I find is that we're going to be having this famous someone who's wrote some of your textbook. His name is Matt Bishop. Some of you are going to have to study his textbook, I think, in first or second year or whatever. So you're going to meet him. And we're going to have a whole day called Circuit Nook, which is a play on words, of course, for those who understand Nook in Norwegian. Is security is about having something that's secure enough. And how do you figure out what is secure enough? All right. So, you are here. Why you are here? You're here to make sure I don't die of blue screen. No, I don't. That you don't die of blue screen, because I think you're going to inherit a lot of this. And what it is that we've made a lot of mistakes, and we just don't want you as students to make the same mistakes. We want you to make totally new mistakes. So you're here to learn how to learn from totally new mistakes. And Simon, speaking of mistakes, I'd like to introduce Simon to give the next presentation.
Right. Okay, so you can hear me, and hopefully I don't have as much noise as you have. So I'll turn his off. Can you hear me through the microphone? Yep. Okay, good. Okay, so this is our, on the side here, we have our questioning system. Yes, I have suggestions for the audio. I will use this audio rather than his audio, is one of the questions that came up. This is our EduLab questioning system. As a game developer, I think of everything as being related to choices you make, because games are about choices. When we applied recently for some PhD funding, what we did is instead of saying, well, I will take the load myself, and I will try and create an environment myself that is about me, we approached and worked with a whole collection of professors. And this is kind of like being a guild in a game, right? It's a multiplayer game. This is a big challenge. I can't take down this enemy by myself, so I need a guild of people with different skills in different areas to have like high DPS and to be a healer. And so we made a community of professors. And the idea was that by bringing together people with different skills, we can take on larger challenges. And so we created this group and kind of looked at different areas. We've got a cyber range, which are sort of games for testing out activities.
looking at how you deter people and the social technical aspects, and the games aspects. And so we build this kind of who's got the most skills in which area. And it kind of comes from that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it takes a village to raise a PhD. PhDs need input from a lot of people. And cybersecurity is such a large challenge that no one of us can take on the whole beast. So we're going to work together. We're going to be flexible in this, right? So unlike traditional PhDs and traditional research areas where I define a research area and focus on that, what we're going to do is say, okay, things are changing so fast, we're not entirely sure what the student should be publishing in 4 years' time, because I don't know what the threat will be then. So I can't define now exactly what that problem is going to be. So we need to have this group of people who can respond when needed. And so we will also need volunteers from hopefully some of you who will play our games that we create to teach about information security. We'll test our simulations in the cyber range. We'll give us feedback on motivation and how your extended network of people do things, right? Because unfortunately, all of you in this room are odd.
Unique.
Unique. You're all individuals. Because you're here at a university talking about information security, right? That makes you like this percentage of the population, right? You're all very weird. However, you know normal people, right? You've met normal people. They exist out there in the real world. And you can access them. And so if you can help us be part of that network to get to your siblings, your friends, your parents, your nephews and nieces, ask them about how they're using their tablets. Actually help us grow our understanding of security and behavior as part of this kind of broader community. Games. Now, I've been teaching games for a while now. And as I said, I think games are about making choices and interactions, right? If you don't interact with information, it's not a game, it's a story, right? If I tell you a story and you just listen to me, that's not a game. There's no interaction there. Now, unfortunately, we've tried the model of telling you how to behave, right? And telling you how often you should change your password and how many different passwords you should have, and we've told you what to do. And it doesn't really work that well. So part of what we're doing is how do we get you to interact with something where your choices make the difference in the environment and understanding what your choices are. And so as part of that, we look at building simulations and games where you can explore those choices and you can explore the world. And luckily for games, we generally provide safe environments to do this, right? Because it would be a bit terrible to let you immediately on to the real infrastructure of Norway. A few years ago, we had the head of a company who has four users they develop for, right? So they're like a 20-person company, and they've got four users, right? But the software they develop runs the electrical infrastructure for Norway, which means there are four people in Norway who can turn the power off to Oslo by pressing the wrong button. Now, as an information security person, we don't want to put you in that environment and say, right, make that secure, because that's got real consequences. So we can create games and environments that stimulate this. We are going to talk a lot about questions. So questions, you think of questions as being relatively simple, right? I can ask a why question. But actually, there's lots of features of questions. And we've talked about that. So are they answerable, right? So, you know, some questions there isn't an answer for. Other questions, like what's my name? That's an answerable question. Why do I care so much about games? That's a much harder question to answer. And I don't know if it's answerable. Is the question relevant? Is it specific? Is it actionable, right? If I ask you a question, do I change what I do depending on your answer? Is it engaging? Is it succinct? Which apparently Norwegians don't know that word particularly Well, even though they use it all the time. So you are quite succinct as Norwegians, but it basically means short. Is the question rhetorical? Is it educational? Is it humorous? These are all qualities of questions. Now, as a designer, when I'm designing games, the questions that I create in my games will relate to these, and they'll relate to the context you're in. So you could ask questions in here. Does this work? It's succinct. Does it work? And I think it's answerable. Yes, it did. It's specific. Well, it could be asked at any time of anything, so it's not necessarily succinct to this particular experience, right? So you can look at those qualities of those questions. And also the question relates to context. Is this question answerable by me? Right? Because you could ask me a question that is answerable, but I don't know the answer to. So when we work on games, when we ask research questions, when we create secure situations, we have to understand the context, and we have to ask high-quality, good questions. We're going to do that to make games. And I like games, but also the public seems to like games, right? So part of the reason to make games is to engage the general public, because when you're trying to secure an environment, it's your weakest link that is the problem, right? So they say you've got to harden everything. They talk about the border wall in, like, Trump and his border wall. The issue is the weakest border security guard is the problem, right? And they've had ones who are corrupt and let, as they said, tons of drugs through, because you just need to find one of those currently 10,000, soon to be 15,000 people. You need to find one corrupt person among 15,000 people. Probably not that hard. And so if you find that one, all the rest of them can do a perfect job, and that one can let everything through. So you've got to find a way of engaging everybody. And you've got a way of finding redundancy, and you've got to engage developers. So as programmers, you also have to care about security. We have to operationalize what we mean by secure systems. So by building simulations, by building games, to test our theories, we can show how they work in reality or how they work with real people. It also provides us with perspective. The military use games to prepare for war, and I think Russia are about to start some war games at the moment, I believe, and the Ukraine is getting a bit nervous, and America is about to start this in the South
China Sea. We have Aurora in Sweden right now.
Right, yeah, so there's a bunch of war games, and they're preparing for war. Information security, we kind of have to do this before war starts, right? We have to secure now. We have to secure in peacetime because there's constantly a threat. So, and I think with that, I'll hand over. And if you have any questions, Gauss is coming down. If you have any questions, you can either ask them up here. Do we have anything coming up? Oh, so, also is putting their dumpsters online. Should they be secured with literally everything in our society coming along? How do we decide, what to secure and what to leave be? Should anything not be secured? So you have to think of why you're securing things. Okay, so there's an issue of, are you securing it because you don't like sharing information, or are you securing it because what someone will do with that information is actually going to damage you, right? So, you know, if my internet history included a whole bunch of My Little Pony videos, and that got shared with other people, I don't actually mind, but some people would, right? They wouldn't want their My Little Pony habit to be exposed to the world. But that doesn't actually cause me harm by sharing that, right? However, if they get my banking history and my bank accounts and my logins, that might cause me financial harm, right? So for securing some things, you have to work out, like, the risk, right? There's a whole bunch of risk analysis. And in games, we can model risk analysis, right? So that's something we can do. Okay, so.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Yep. You all can hear me fine. You all hear me? Good. Okay. So I'm here to talk about the Cyber 912 Student Challenge. I'm going to talk about the competition. I'm going to talk about how it's done, and the content, and the purpose of this competition. So, Simon talked about games. This was also a game. It was a scenario-based simulation. when most people think about IT competitions or security competitions, they think of, I think that most people connect this to like technical competitions, capture the flag. Thanks. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So but yeah. Are you hearing me now?
Yeah.
Says, yeah. Oh, yeah, good. Okay. So, I was talking about technical competitions. Cyber 912 is not so technical. It's more a scenario based, where we get a scenario of some cyber incidents and we need to handle them on a government EU level. The purpose of this, it might sound maybe a bit trivial maybe, but it's not. Recently, we had on Monday, I think, or Tuesday, I think the USS destroyer John McCain crashed in close to Malaysia, and they're suspecting that it might be cyber related. So the American military is at least looking into it. And the question becomes, if it is cyber related, and if there was some cyber attackers involved, how do you handle it on a government level? So this is the context of the Cyber 912 challenge, these types of problems. So it bridges the gap between technology and policy. So the scenario we faced, we had several cyber incidents that had occurred in the EU. There were multiple attacks against hospitals using ransomware. And we, as a team, were supposed to make recommendations on how to handle these incidents. And the recommendations, kind of tricky to make these types of recommendations, because there's supposed to be policies, and a policy is supposed to include a lot of things. For example, at the EU level, if something happens within the EU, who do you contact, who do you involve, what are the consequences of involving somebody, what are the consequences of not involving somebody, should you use the military, should you use the private sector, should you use the public sector, should you use an indirect response? These types of problems is what we were facing in the scenario. And also we had to figure out how the media would respond to our different types of suggestions. So this is quite tricky. So also a lot of fun and very challenging. So this is the competition. The competition was, we had a four-man team and one coach. The full digital border squad is in the picture, where you have three observers or substitutes, and you have two bachelor students from Jørstadmoen in uniforms, and you have two students from Gjøvik, one master student and me. I was a PhD student at the time, and the esteemed professor Coach Kowalski in the middle. So the task was that we got an intelligence report 2 weeks before the competition. The intelligence report consisted of about 20 pages, and from this intelligence report we had to write a 500 word summary of the main points. We had to prep a 10-minute brief where we had to suggest four courses of action to handle the incidents, and we had to provide these four policy options, as they call them. And together with this, we had to deliver a 2-page decision document that the coaches or the judges would read. They got 2 minutes to read it while we were just standing there staring at them. So that was kind of too long minutes. So the intelligence report. Dissecting the intelligence report, that was actually a lot more tricky than you'd think. So we read through this intelligence report, and all of us reached the conclusion that none of this really pulls in the same direction. So we had different sources, different pieces of information. We had, for example, news articles We had classified NATO briefs. We had this memo from the MI6. We had Twitter, and we had other things. So all of this we had to go through and kind of pull out the information that was relevant for the scenario and try to establish a timeline. So we didn't really know what to put in this brief. We didn't know what they really wanted to know, the boss or the judges, what they really want to know. So we asked Hilmar Haraldsson at CCIS. He has been an officer in the Norwegian army, and he said, you need to figure out what the boss wants to know. So that's what we did. So we made a situation report. We made the who, what, where, when, how, and why of this situation. So the what was multiple cyber attacks on critical infrastructure. The who were actors and the motivations or attribution. We had primarily two actors, one terrorist actor and one probably terrorist actor, seemingly motivated by financial gains by targeting the hospitals. The where was hospitals in the EU, and the timeline showed that the attacks occurred very close to each other in time. And the how and the why was ransomware towards vulnerable hospitals. And we had a problem because a lot of the hospitals were vulnerable to these types of attack. So we needed to figure out what to do about it. And we had to develop policy options consisting of policy instrument. And I'm quoting a NATO official here, to prevent things that go boom. So what is a policy option, you think? We didn't know. We've never made a policy option before. So how do we make one? So this is the guidelines that they gave us. I'm not expecting you to read all of it. It's kind of long, but it raises some very interesting questions. Should we have an immediate response versus a delayed response? Should we see what happens and wait it out, or should we do something immediately, and what will be the consequence of that? How will the media react if they find out that we didn't do anything about it and we knew about it, for example? Should we involve the government? Should we do something rash? Or should we do a private sector response and try to get maybe some private search into this handling? Or how to do it? So that was very, very interesting questions and very interesting problems to work with. So we traveled to Geneva, and this is the opening ceremony where we got the opening and welcoming remarks. On the slide, you see a lot of the teams. There were 27 teams, registered teams from several countries and universities, including the Delft University, Air University, which is a university for foreign officers in the US. We had West Point, Royal Holloway, Stanford, Oxford, Glasgow, Lausanne, and up there with the stars, the magnificent Mjøs combination of Gjøvik-Jørstadmoen. Very good. So we were delivering the 10-minute policy brief. This is what it looks like. This is what it looks like. To the left, you have the awesome Digital Border Squad giving their sermon of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and what to do about it. In the middle of the pictures are the observers. Holding up the sign is the administrator. And to the right, outside of the picture, were six judges sitting there and watching us with very, strict eyes, trying to make out what we were about. So we went in there, delivered a 10-minute speech, 10 minutes of questions from the judges we had to answer, very nervous stuff, didn't really know what they were going to ask, so couldn't really prepare. And then we went out for 10 minutes while they scored us, and then we got 10 minutes of feedback after, so we went back in. So this went fairly well, so we advanced to the second round. There were three rounds in this competition, so this was the first round. The second round, we got the new intelligence report at 7 in the evening, and we started working at it at 8, and we were supposed to give a new policy brief at 9 the next morning, so that was quite challenging. And the intelligence report was just as big as the first one, so that was quite challenging. Also a lot of fun and very challenging to work with these pieces of information and trying to piece together what's going to happen. And yeah, so I need to hurry up. So scenario part two, more shit that hit the fan, or larger chunks, if you will, with more attacks, deaths directly linked to attacks, you know, risk of escalation, you know, everything was gonna go bang, everything was gonna escalate, so what to do about it. So that was, so we need to figure out a couple of other policy options as well. In the picture is the second place finishers, the Keep Calm and Cyber On team. And this was the setting that we delivered the second brief in. And it was very nervous, you know, 1 meter between us and the judges. Very, you know, serious setting. So, yeah. So four teams, you know, the four teams advanced to the third round. We got fifth. So so almost. So final round, you know. Incident had turned into a crisis. The target was the NATO summit in Turkey, and everything was just going bang. They were combining cyber attacks with kinetic attacks. They were targeting hospitals with ransomware, and they were bombing civilians. So they were effectively harming people and denying them treatment. And so that was the end of the competition and scenario. And a couple of weeks later, after this, the WannaCry happened, and they targeted hospitals. Nobody called the Digital Border Squad. We had the policies ready. Yeah, no. So, all in all, great experience. Thank you.
Is it on?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. No, that's okay. Don't worry. Okay, hi. Well, this is kind of a different security challenge. It's the first year that we run it in Norway. It's a more technical one. So just a few words in the interest of time. This is where you see two titles here. It's the Norwegian Cybersecurity Challenge, which will lead us to forming the team that will take part in the European Cybersecurity Challenge. Now, all this, what is it all about? Well, we all know that we are lacking IT security professionals, and this is not typical to Norway, it's not typical to Europe, it's typical to the whole world. And one way of trying to mitigate this shortage, now many countries launch national cybersecurity competitions, of course, with the aim of finding new and young talents in cybersecurity, and also to encourage young people to pursue a career in cybersecurity. These are not hacking competitions, they are competitions. So the primary aim is to see and to show that there is fun in doing that, but it's an interesting thing that you can do, and you can gain knowledge out of it. Now, the next layer of that in a European context, of course, was to start a European level kind of competition. So the national teams of the nations that are participating in this, I believe this year there will be something like 16 or 17 nations, are competing among them. There is no prize. And come on now. You get a free trip to Spain, but there is no prize to win to the winner. Okay, so the idea is that we just have fun and compete there. Okay, and of course the benefits are, as I already said, to motivate younger people to get engaged with that. Now, this is organized by the Commission. It is supported technically and organizationally by ENISA. ENISA is the European Network and Information Security Agency. It happens every year. This year, as already divulged by Stuart, it will be held in Malaga on the 30th of October to the 3rd of November. So it's several days that this goes on. Yeah, but it's certainly not raining in Malaga. Yeah, well, it's quite down to the south. Okay. some more information on the Norwegian cybersecurity challenge. We already had our qualification round on the 19th of August, that's a few days ago. That was an online competition, a capture the flag type of competition of a team from 1 to 5 participants. There will be a final competition in Gjøvik on the 30th of September, so those that will be invited to the second round will come physically to Gjøvik take part in the second round. Eligible for this are Norwegian citizens or those that legally reside in Norway and born between 1992 and 2001. So, Stuart, you can't be part of the team. No, you're not eligible. You're too young for that. Okay. Now, the national team will be formed after these competitions. The rules, the European rules, are that the team should have at most 10 persons, at least 2 of each gender. They should be Norwegian citizens, and they should be born between 1992 and 2001. So we'll know the team after the 30th of September, let's say beginning of October. And my last slide is just to give you a few data about information about how the first round went. This one will show you how many solved challenges we had and how many failed ones. In total, there were something like 23 challenges. As you can see in the graph, these are the number of solved of teams that solved each challenge, and it goes from the most easy one to the most difficult one, which is expected. So this shows us that we weren't very far off from judging the difficulty of the challenges. And the challenges were, in terms of classification, were broken down as they say. You can see that there are crypto, there are forensic challenges, PWN, reprogramming web, and anything you can imagine. So it was a mixture of all those. Obviously, the names of the challenges are there, and they do give you some hint on what they are. And on the top right corner, what you can see is the scoring of the first 10, I think, teams during the competition. So how this evolved. So that's it. I'm afraid you don't have the chance of taking part in this year, but I do hope that you will choose to do so in the coming year.
More information at the website.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Now we're going over to...
I get lost. Turn the volume up. Steve, can you hear us? Can you hear us? Can you see us?
So, as I say, in NTNU, we have many, many activities going on in information security. And this is Stig Frudermars. He's a professor in information security and communication technology. And he has been running a hacker group for some time now. And there's information about the hacker group there. You have the website. And we're just raising him to come up. Steve, can you see the crowd? Do we have contact? Is your mic? Hello?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Okay.
Go ahead. The room is yours.
Okay.
Can you
see me?
We see you on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Okay. So how can I put the...
There should be a video icon.
Video icon.
Put this video on?
Yeah. Take away the cross. But the motorcycle's nice. We have a picture up here, too, so they see you. With,
I was...
Give it a couple of seconds. If not, we have your picture, so this is,
we have a photograph of you on the bike, but anyway, here.
No, up here too.
Yep. Okay.
We give it a count of 5. Do we have video? No. There.
There you go.
Oh, now, okay, I see. You had the hood on, that's why.
Now you can see me. Now
yes.
Now you
yes.
can see me over here.
Yeah. And you need your life size.
I'll move over here. Okay, now you can see me. You see, I dressed up for the occasion.
And this is his gang, too. This is his cult. So.
Okay, so I'm Stig, I'm sitting here in Trondheim, and I'm running this this hacker club for some time, yes. I'm going to tell you about our student hacker club, HackerMind. So this is a very different approach from what you've been presented so far, I think, but it's up to yourself to judge about that. So. I initiated the Itemize Hacker Club about 3 years ago. Direct inspiration for this was the student activity came from my 1 year visit at the computer science department at the University of California, Santa Barbara, during the year of 2013. So there at the UCSB, they're running an international top-ranked student hacker team called Shellfish. So that spells shell like in shell and fish like in E-H-I-S-H. Do you get it? Shellfish. Okay. It's also because the university is situated onshore, quite near to the Pacific Ocean. So fish, but fishing is a different thing. Okay, I don't need to explain. But it's run by very clever PhD and master students there as part of the computer science research group at the UCSB. So this InfoSec research group was started a long time ago by my good friend, Professor Dick Kemmerer, and now Giovanni Vigna and Chris Kriegel, also professors there, and they run the thing. Supported by the Shellfish folks, you might already know that UCSB organized an annual international real-time capture the flag competition, and you should look into that and participate next time. Actually, my first and the new group of students that participated in this, ICTF, was back in 2004. So back to Itemize, my hacker club. My student hacker club. So Itemize is supposed to be fun. Itemize is about practice, not theory. It's about skills.
And pizza.
What you can do with the real world stuff. And perhaps better, what you want to do. So Itemize is not another university course. We don't do syllabus. We don't do books. We don't do reading materials. We don't do lectures. We don't do assignments, tests, or exams. We don't do learning goals, and we don't do course plans. So Itemize is not another stinking university course. It's a student-driven playground, I figure. Itemize welcomes both software and hardware artists and wannabes. Itemize club members are students at all levels, from first, second, up to fifth year, and from most NTNU ICT programs that we have at the ALG. The members have an instinctive drive, ideally, to exploit software and digital tech and gadgets into weird and surprisingly odd new ways. So that's the general setting. We don't talk so much about cyberspace as we talk about software, hardware, and information security. You will rule if you value practice, coding skills, and playing it by the keyboard. Sure, a little bit of organization by the Uber hackers that we have assure freewheeling and smooth routes. An important activity of Itemize is to actively participate and achieve respectable rankings in international hacker contests of various kinds. You've been presented to some now. These typically take place over 2-3 days, often in the weekends at odd hours, and these events produce motivation, experience, and new skills. So we meet bi-weekly in some free afternoon, around 5 to 8. Sometimes we're about 10, 12 students, the hardcore, sometimes we count 25. We share and discuss solutions to challenges in earlier competitions, new and exciting tanker stuff, hearsay, old and new tools, and more. And now and then we have visitors. Of course, we also enjoy sponsored pizza and soft drinks as an absolute necessity at our gatherings. So, at the end, I wanted to tell you that at first we started out with using some old server machines that we got from our department. But last year we started building our own big GPU computer, and we call it the Itemizer. So we now have 4 of the fastest GPU cards on board, the NVIDIA GTX 1080. And that means that we can exploit more than 10,000 CPU cores that are available. So what we're doing now, in the near future, that we're playing with this massive Prel computations for hash computations, dictionary attacks, building rainbow tables, you know, in the cryptographic sense, and who knows what. Okay, that was my presentation. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, Dave. That's basically it now. We have the questions up here. We have, right now as it stands now, there's only 5 people that voted, but we did. So the one that had the dumpster question gets a prize.
Who asked the dumpster question?
Right.
Yeah, you get a prize.
You get a prize, yes. And other than that, what I'd like to see is that, see you soon. As I say, the next lecture is on the 29th. I think it's our last Friday of every month at this time, also in this place. And looking forward to seeing you in the seminar to get more information about that. And have a great semester and learn about cybersecurity, and let's make Norway a safer place. Thank you.
Can you take this as well? Yeah, I'll put one on top of the other.
I'm a security man, and it's a very important question to deal with nerds. You know, as a respective
one. More challenge?
I think.
Okay. Do you want moderate challenge or hard challenge?
That's the ultimate.
And it can be difficult.
Yeah, no, that's even.
They and Tom are probably.